Welcome to Turn Extension, a supplemental podcast for the Advanced Maneuvers YouTube channel.
All right. Can everyone hear us now? Are we clear?
I think we're going to spend most of the cast just apologizing to everybody that we can't figure this crap out.
I know. Okay. All right. We're good. All right. So the question was, what is going to get you back into War Machine? Gaston, do you want to try this again?
I mean, the number one thing that I need is the ability to tilt you. And so far, this cast has been amazing for tilting you.
It says you're muted.
Excellent.
Here, so while we figure that out, right, I'll talk about kind of what's going to get me back in the Mark IV. How about that? So at least you guys can hear something. So we're not going through 30 minutes of just issues. All right, so I think for me, right, what's going to get me back into War Machine is kind of what's happening right now, right? Like, I loved War Machine, right? I grew up with Mark I with it. I did Mark II. I was a PG for a long time. Kind of really where I walked off is Mark III, and it's not necessarily because of the game itself. I actually really had to think about it. Why did I leave Mark III? And kind of the reason was I had moved around a couple different places. I ended up in Bel Air, and right when Mark III came out, I think 2 months later, my wife became pregnant, so my life kind of changed. So I focused a lot on my kids, and I really haven't been able to get out. What's going on? You know, I was paying attention to the chat. So I haven't really been able to get out and play as much, right? And I've been really lucky where we have a group that's actually growing with Mark III 5 minutes away from me, right? There was a group of people that started it up and really had into it. And I was watching on the Discord. I was kind of watching from a distance where I wanted to, but I really couldn't commit to it. And for me, it was more so like, I haven't been playing for a long time. I really didn't want to get back into a game that I'd played for a while, stopped, and get really rusty on the rules. So now seeing that Mark IV has come out, I'm really excited to do it. It's a whole new style of a game. I'm super excited for it. Honestly, the only thing that could have made it better for me if it was you go, I go. And I knew that's probably very unlikely for War Machine, but I think that would have been the only other thing I would have wanted to see from this. So for me, Mark IV so far, I'm super excited about it. I know Gaston and Kevin might have a different opinion. So question, I guess, is Gaston, can we hear if they can hear you? And if so, what is your opinion?
Well, I think we can say two things right off the bat. First, no addition change is going to keep me from stomping you. That's baked in.
I mean, I don't think I've won against you yet.
So, damn it. That might be true. Because I could not find the video of you beating me.
I told you.
It was Raven versus Convergence. The other thing that you're completely wrong about is Yugo Igo would be terrible for this game. It's the wrong scale.
Really?
I disagree.
No, it'd be horrible.
I disagree, but that's for another thing, right? So, what would get you into playing War Machine again then?
So it's kind of a roller coaster ride being back and being talking about this game, because we all met with this game. We made lifelong friends and bachelor parties and marriages and weddings and all that with this game, with, you know, this group of people. So, you know, it's definitely pretty cool getting to come back. A new edition is always a chance to reevaluate a game, to look at why did I step back in the first place. And a lot of that goes back to, you know, I'm old, I'm elderly, and I remember to the ye old days of 2016, really long time ago, and that was when you did the transition from Mark II to Mark III. And, you know, they made a lot of mistakes with that transition, I think, to put it gently. And one of the things that they got memed on a lot was, at the time, they're like, hey, has it been 3 years playtested, so on and so forth. It did not live up to that anywhere near. I think that fell apart like a month later, if it even lasted that long. Yeah. But one of the other things that kind of got lost was Hungerford talking about design space. He's like, this edition, these changes are going to open up design space, open up all these places where we can be creative, where we can come up with something new. And I felt, you know, about a year or so in, that they completely failed at that with Mark III. That was just a complete failure. And that made the game stagnate. So I'm really looking for a sizable enough change to allow the game that design space, I'm looking for it to move away from that stagnation. You know, you have people talking about it now, as so they're like, this is the most balanced the game's ever been, everything's pretty much equal, you've kind of hit that equilibrium of all the changes, you know, coming into place, but no one's playing it. So you need to have some sort of change there in order to shake things up, in order to allow more creativity to come into that, and in order to touch upon a lot of the modern ideas and concepts that exists now in gaming that did not exist in 2016, did not exist in 2010 for Mark II. So that's kind of what I'm looking for.
What about you, Kevin?
So originally when you guys asked me this question, one of the things that I really kind of sat down and retrospectively looked at is like, why did I stop playing in the first place? And it, you know, there's a couple different things that were in play at the time. You know, it was one of those situations where, you know, you'd go to the Wednesday night shop and most of the people were trying to mess around with the new CID stuff, which wasn't really live yet. So it was like playing pretend games. And considering I only could usually get in one game a week, I didn't want to play a pretend game. I wanted to play an actual game, you know, especially considering if there was like a local tournament nearby, you know, I wanted to be able to get some sort of practice in before that tournament came in. And I can't do that on a CID game. But then I really got to thinking about it, and that really wasn't it. It was frustrating sometimes for me, you know, that I couldn't get those non-pretend games in. But that really isn't why I stopped. And then I kind of thought about it some more, and it, you know, the rise and fall of metal and the res tech and stuff like that from a hobby perspective, I wasn't a huge fan of the material. I really wanted to see them do the spun styrene. But that's an aesthetic thing. Again, that's not really something that chased me away from the game. And I think what really ended up happening to me was the community that was playing War Machine and Hordes was slowly but surely getting smaller and smaller as people were leaving for a variety of different reasons. And there wasn't an equal amount of new players coming into the game to offset those who were leaving. And a lot of times, most of the people I saw was leaving and causing the community to get smaller was the casual players. And anybody who thinks otherwise is fooling themselves. Games live and die by their casual players. They don't live and die by their competitive players. So the community started getting smaller and smaller, and you know, to add to it on my own personal, I was dealing with eye issues and had to go, you know, prep for surgeries and stuff like that, which means I was even less time. So it really boiled down to where the two main things that brought me joy in participating in the game, which was purpose and community, were slowly going away. My purpose was falling apart. I didn't have the passion to go on Wednesday nights to play. It was just kind of, I'm going on Wednesday nights because it's the thing to do and I like hanging out with my friends. But near the tail end, sometimes I would go to Wednesday night and I would just be like, cool, I'm just going to hang out. Like, I'm going to talk to people. I'm not even really going to play the game. And that was a little frustrating for me that I wasn't getting that purpose or that drive to play the game. And then with the community getting smaller, it's like, you know what, I think I might need to go elsewhere and find another community and another purpose. But even in that situation, it was one of those scenarios where I went over to 40K because my brother went over to 40K and I was enjoying spending time with him and playing games with him, and I kind of felt that purpose again. I wanted to play more. It helped when Pokey wanted to scratch a sci-fi itch, so I got an opportunity to play 40K with him. And then we ended up pulling in Iron Ledge W and more people into 40K to experience that. But then this announcement for Mark IV comes out, and I'm interested. Like, I even posted on my, I think it was my Facebook page, I was like, or maybe it might have been Advanced Maneuvers. I was like, okay, PP, you have my interest. What are you going to do with it now? And this, you know, I'm probably one of those individuals who's interested enough to give it a try. But if it doesn't keep the tempo and my interest, I'm not going to wait until August of next year to give it a shot. They've got my interest for now, and they've got to do something with it to keep it going.
So what do you want to see PP do, though? Like, I think that's kind of an open question. Like, what is for you that's going to keep it? Is it going to be, like, how the 3D printing looks? Is it going to be, like, the rules, right? Because we know that, right, for the rest of this year, we're going to get, Kador, we're going to get some Signar stuff, we're going to get Orgoth, and we might potentially get Dusk. Like, it looks like Kador is coming out a lot earlier than we saw that they kind of projected that box kind of starter set to come out. We might get dust, but what's going to really keep you interested? What's the tipping point for you?
So for me, considering I'm mostly a Trollbloods player, the only thing that I, because I think Hordes isn't until like Gen Con of next year or something like that, it's going to be seeing that Prime list, you know.
Okay.
Because there's the whole, you know, you've got the Unlimited with the Legends models, and then you've got Prime. Well, Unlimited is basically just playing it's not playing 4th edition so much as it's playing 3.5. Like, you get to play with the new rules, and you get to play with the new charge and the no free strikes and all that stuff, but it's still the same cards. It's still the same rules, or I'm assuming. You know, maybe they come out and they provide new rule sets or something like that, but I would think for the most part that they're just going to do minor tweaks to fit what they have into Mark IV. So I kind of look at that as a 3.5, whereas the new stuff that's coming up, that's truly Mark IV. That's been written for Mark IV, designed for Mark IV and stuff. So I need to see what they're going to release with Prime, and I'm worried they're going to wait too long to release the what are Prime and what aren't models. I think it was like August or something, or October or something, they were going to release it. I'd rather know now. Honestly, I'd rather know now. I'd love to be able to sit down and go, hey Herman, I want to play a beta game just so I can see what it's like, and play with the Prime models, because my interest lies more in the Prime version than it does in the Unlimited, because I just view Unlimited, like I said, as a 3.5, not a Mark IV.
I can't handle the chat right now. You guys are killing me. I'm different, right? I am on the opposite end of this, man. I am like so ready to go. I am already, I know Cutthroat Cure is in Gen Con right now, right? So I definitely want to see if he can pick me up the Signar box.
Yeah, shout out to Cutthroat.
Huh?
I said shout out to Cutthroat if he's out there.
Yeah, shout out. We posted up some pictures on the Facebook group earlier today about some pictures he was already able to take. I'm already trying to get that whole starter box set so I can get everything as soon as possible. I'd love to honestly try to get it on to the channel. I don't know if we do. I'd love for us to do a battle cast, you know, something like that. Hint, hint, you know, dropping something maybe for the future there, Kevin. Yeah, if you want to do it, you know, it's all up to you. But I would love to play that. Like, I think the Signar stuff looks so cool, and maybe, you know, it's because it's Signar, it's my first love, that's the faction I started with, that's what I always want to play. I love my Convergence a lot, but Signar is, it's the boys in blue for me. So maybe it's because it's they're the first army coming out, and that's what excites me, is why I'm so gung-ho about it. I know someone just posted up, how do you feel about every unit being a min unit?
It's Hoffman.
Yeah, so for me, I don't mind that, actually. I like it. I like the idea of a faster gameplay. What about you guys?
Go ahead, Gaston.
Just real quick, as you know, we're looking at the chat here, I need to do a shout-out quick to Tinman XL. Actually taught me how to play this game with his channel. I just want to do a shout-out to that guy. He's fucking badass.
Yeah, okay, yes. So I'm gonna go on a record here. I don't think I've ever officially said this. The Advanced Maneuvers channel exists because I used to sit down and just watch 10-Man XL videos. Like, I would just loop them, the next video and the next video and the next video, because he really actually inspired me into the concept of what is being able to produce a battle report on the channel. And just, I took it and ran with it and started the channel and dragged these schmucks along with me. So, mad props to the grandfather. It's between him and Menoth John when it comes to doing entertaining content like this.
That's true.
Sorry, I had to get that out there.
Timmy, if you're still there, I don't know if you left or not, but if you are, thank you so much. You're the reason why people have to sit and listen to us.
So, yes, what are your thoughts? Min units?
So I guess there's two questions, right? One is like, you know, where's your excitement level for this? Like, what's going to actually keep you staying? And then also, like, what are your thoughts on the min units?
So my excitement level has been a bit of a roller coaster. It very much got my attention. It very much got my interest. And I've been going through the rules pretty much every day since they made the announcement, just kind of picking things apart and thinking them through. And at the end of the day, I don't mind any of the changes that they made. And I don't think that any of the changes that they made are impactful enough to make a long-term difference as things currently stand. So I see you shaking your head.
I disagree. I'm going to wait until you finish. But I disagree.
Let me finish.
I'm going to let you finish. I'm going to let you get your reward, Taylor Swift, but Beyonce had the best video.
Wow.
Freaking shots fired. Wow.
I actually feel really pretty right now and successful because I got the award and I'm pretty sure you didn't.
All right.
So anyways, all the changes that they made, like, they've been very well accepted by the community because these are window dressing changes to the internal framework of the game. They are not structural changes to, you know, allow creativity to come into the game. You know, that's why I was kind of making a list of, like, what am I looking to see? And one of the big complaints about Mark III, one of the big complaints about Mark II is, like, standoff gameplay. You know, we have this pre-measuring. Pre-measuring is a great thing. I believe pre-measuring should be the standard for every tabletop game, and you only take it away if there's, like, a reason, like inaccurate artillery or something within the game structure. But they never made the adjustments so that way you're not playing 12.1 inches. So that's been something that's percolated for years, and I have seen nothing in this that breaks that. And I've actually seen them pull away elements that would help offset that. I'm looking for, like, scenario integration. Every single modern game has a scenario built into the core rules. It has a scenario gameplay built into the model's rules. Like, even to the point where, like, if 40K is doing a better job integrating scenario gameplay, that's not good, because that's pretty much written by three drunk Welshmen stuck in a well. You know, that's... If they're doing it, you got some problems if you're not. So I'm looking for, you know, give me this scenario. How many times can you shuffle around a circle and a rectangle and a flag across a table? We need something more interactive. We need something that allows for more dynamicism within the gameplay, and something that actually forces you to use the entire table, not just meeting in the middle. You know, you see Malifaux is forcing it all the corners, 40K is forcing it all the corners. Give me something like that. I'm looking for a breakdown of thumb twiddling. You know, where I'm just sitting there, like I said at the very beginning, you go, I go is not ideal for the scale of game. But you need some sort of reaction system. You need me to do something while you're just sitting there rolling dice and missing all my models because you suck at rolling.
Yeah, I will say that's probably one thing about War Machine that was always a little frust, which is just, okay, I finished my turn. And you see, like, you go to tournaments or something, like, you see it all the time. I finished my turn, the person sits down and just waits. Like, okay, tell me which models to move and when it's my turn again.
I would just like to point out, I didn't sit and wait, I played on my phone.
See, I think that one of the things that's going to change with that, right, is that we need to play a game, right? I think we really need to sit down and play a game.
Yeah, this is all theoretical, too.
Yeah, because I feel like the turns will go by so much faster, right? You could go into a tournament, a Mark II and Mark III, and you could spend 30 minutes on your turn, right? And that is painful for your opponent. But that's what a turn could be. I don't see it being that long anymore.
Well,
it's not necessarily about, like, the turn length. And I don't mind them streamlining the main rules of the game. But when you streamline by removing things, you have to add in new places where you can insert different levers. For an example, they're doing the spell racks. They're actually trying to do that now as opposed to Mark III, introducing spell rack. That's a way for you to add different things to rotate into the game. It's a way for you to customize from game to game, to make changes from game to game strategically based on your opponent. I have problems with the way they implemented spell rack, but that is a good system to introduce new design space. They have the little goofy card system. That's a place where you're introducing design space. So they are trying to do that within this and bring those elements in. It's the implementation of how they do it feels very alpha to me. It feels like you have the concept, but you haven't polished it down to a place where you can expect this to have new concepts coming in year after year after year and make it last, you know, for the 4 or 5 years that a normal edition lasts.
Now, I will say, and I think this kind of carries back to the conversation about min units, and to Tony's point, you know, if we go down to the 50-point level, and that's now that it's 50 points and no battle group, that's, you know, there's no additional battle group points, and we're dealing with min units, so movement efforts, like the fact that one model moves and then the rest teleport up to it and stuff like that, that timing frame gets trimmed down. the amount of time that you are sitting and waiting could be substantially lower. Like, you know, it could be a situation where you're only waiting 10 minutes before your next turn, which would be fantastic. So, I mean, those are steps in the right direction. I agree with you that they haven't hit all the marks, but they are definitely identifying things that can help streamline the game further, and make it easier and less things to look up and questions and stuff like that. I think they're heading in the right direction. I guess that, you know, as much as we want to say there's things that can be done to improve it further, I think they are going in the right direction. I think Mark IV will be better. I just don't know if we've necessarily hit the pinnacle of War Machine gaming.
So, and I kind of want to clarify my point here. To me, the twiddling the thumb isn't necessarily a time issue as much as it is an agency issue. I do not have agency in what's happening and the ability to react what's happening on your turn. And if I start looking at, for better or for worse, Mark IV is basically a new game. They want you to buy new models, new armies, it's a new game. So therefore, you are now getting compared out to games within the wider community. I look at these games in the wider community, and they're going a place where you have these built-in concepts of reaction. They're either going small enough in scale where you go to Yugo, Igo, as Malifaux, Marvel Crisis Protocol, Infinity,
Legion.
Legion, yeah. Or they're going to a place where you have like Horus Heresy, where they have reactions built into the core framework. So you have kind of this ability, like, okay, you walked up to me, I have one unit to get shot. You know, so where is that coming from? If every other game is doing it, where is that agency on your turn within this framework? Is it because you're removing countercharge, you're removing defensive strike, and a bunch of other things according to the announcement because those are quote-unquote bad play experiences? Why don't you take those things and reintroduce them in the command cards? So now I have this like, hey, I got my once per game countercharge I can threaten you with. That gives me something to kind of do a little psychological warfare back and forth and have that ability to move outside of your turn lets you start breaking up that 12.1 standoff. You have that once per game enliven, that once per game movement.
Well, and I wonder, right? Like, we haven't seen all the command cards, right? So maybe there's faction specific ones that'll get us to be able to do that. Well, like, I think that's kind of interesting, right? I like that idea. My fear is, kind of even going back to your scenario thing, right? Secondaries would scare me. I mean, we've had a discussion a couple weeks ago, right? Where I've never played 40K until recently, right? I picked them up because Big Knights look kind of fun. But like, we've had a lot of discussions about how secondaries play there and that some of them are just not good, right? Like, and I feel like that would hinder War Machine if we had that, where like some factions just didn't have good secondaries and they had to play, you know, with an arm behind their back.
Well, so first of all, don't use 40K as like an amazing design standard.
No. So
secondly, you guys wanted to play it, okay? So I'm playing around.
Hey, we're playing it because it's fun. We're not playing it because it's the pinnacle of gaming. I hear what you're saying, Gaston, and I kind of agree with you in the sense of I would have liked to have actually seen that baked in to the core rules or the cards or something. And maybe they are. You know, maybe that's going to be something that's coming along. But I'm almost curious. Privateer Press in the past has always tried to address design corrections through the Steamroller packet, the introduction of special rules on the objectives and stuff like that. Is it possible that it's already baked into their plan, but it's a scenario where, like, when they release the Steamroller packet, there's going to be, you know, other agency things that you can find within that packet that you can select for your game, similar to how we used to select an objective in order to give us a special rule? I'd rather it be in the core rules, but is that a possibility?
It's possible. I mean, I don't know what they're up to, but that's why I flipped to the scenarios that are in the book, which are the same old scenarios. And then there's a lot of other things that are showing up in the rules packets as I'm going through that's making me doubt that that's the direction things are going.
So someone brought this up, right? Sorry to cut you guys off. Someone had asked, hey, look, someone came in a little bit late, and it was Veil of Darkness, and asked, what's the consensus so far? So I'll just go quick. For me, I'm all in, right? I am here for some Signar. I'm going to do some Storm Legion. Gaston?
I'm certainly willing to try it, but unless something radically changes, my expectation is that it's going to be a lot of interest in the beginning, and then it's going to peter off quickly.
It's a new game for you to constantly beat me in. I don't see how that's an issue.
I have like three other games that I constantly beat you in.
That's true. Kevin, what about you?
Hopefully optimistic. I'm interested, but it's... I'm going back to the fact of I need to see the Prime rules. I need to see the Prime cards and stuff like that. There's no Horde factions. I'd love to see what the Storm Legion is for Trolls, or what the Storm Legion is for Scorn and so forth. Before, I mean...
Scorn's dead. Yeah, let's be serious.
Hey, shut up. I need to see what's coming, and I appreciate that Privateer Press put out that roadmap and showed us, hey, this is what's going on and stuff like that. But admittedly, as a Hordes player, I feel left out right now. I don't feel like I've got something to sink my teeth into. I mean, you're jumping all over this, Tony, because your pride and joy, Signar, is one of the armies out there. For Christ's sakes, they already have three casters. Three brand new casters for Signar have been released. And, you know, Kator and Orgoth get one, and nothing for everybody else.
Okay, Kator's still coming out. Okay, give it some time.
Your Signar pride is showing. Be quiet, the big boys are talking.
So the thing is this is painful. I actually agree with Tony on going all in.
Yes!
So if you are going
to... I'm so happy this has been recorded. I'm so happy.
If I was to adopt this game, it would be with a Mark IV faction. It would not be with a Legacy faction. And that's...
Yeah, but how can I do that if I haven't seen anything for the new factions? And I won't see anything until next year.
You play your Prime until your faction gets shown, and then you pick your faction when everyone speaks to you.
That's their goal, and that's the reason why they have the Prime. But the thing that you're running into with the Prime is, if you look at the cards that they've released, is you're not getting over these quote-unquote new features. You're getting a port of what you already had. The purpose of getting into a new system, a new game, is to take advantage of these new features. And you can, you know, you can kind of mix and match and play whatever games you want. Like, oh, you know, you could have done the arm swaps on like a Crusader chassis, because a Crusader, Templar, or Vanquisher are all the same thing. And like, yeah, we figured out how to magnetize them about a decade ago. But it's a new game. You take on to the things that have access to this new depth, this new space. And that's what's supposed to draw you in.
See, and so, I kind of like that. And by the way, I'm just going to say Rain. I know what your real name is. I don't know if you want me saying it online. So I'll just say, I call this Rain. I can't read or write. he brought up, right, like Orgoth, three casters were shown. I remember two of them. I can't remember the third. And I know with Kator, it was that girl. And then there's this dude with like a wolf head on that looks like a super awesome like sniper.
Oh, I didn't know he was going to be a caster. So,
I believe he's the caster. Yeah, he's a sniper caster.
I hear what you're saying. However, I'm going to ignore that because that doesn't fit my narrative of Signar privilege. So
that's fine. I'm okay with that.
If I had to commit right now, I would play Signar.
They're so cool looking.
They're not.
They are.
They're just better than Kator and Orgoth.
I do agree they're cool looking. Fuck Signar.
That's so hurtful, guys. That's so hurtful. Hey, so... Deanie, right? One of our local people that we know. I had a question about asking about what are you guys' thoughts on the 3D sculpts?
I want to see the material. Like, I keep seeing pictures of it, and the problem with 3D material is the way the light goes into the plastic, it actually causes it to look lighter than it actually would in person when you do it on camera. So you run into a situation where you can't see the finer details of things when it's some, you know, exposed photo of 3D printed. I'm concerned that they won't be able to, well, let me just say, I really don't know if they're going to be able to achieve the really, really fine detail that we're used to seeing in metals or like a spun polystyrene or something like that. But I'm willing to give it a shot. I'm curious how the material will take when it comes to priming and paint adherence, but that's probably no different than any other model.
So when Cutthroat Cure actually got to hold them and see them, and he said he liked them. He said that he thought the detail was really good. He felt that they were really light, a little smaller, but it felt like he liked them a lot. Gaston, what are your thoughts? Because I know you have thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, well, the thing is like, I've done plastics manufacturing, professionally. So like I've gone down the whole rabbit hole of, you know, FDM versus SLS versus resin casting, resin printing and all that. And to me, ultimately, it was kind of cool that they made a big deal of that in the announcement, but you're going to be pass fail with your customers. Are the models going to be too brittle? Are they going to be just right because of the curing? Are they going to tank the paint well? Are they not? Are they going to have the details or not? It's going to be very binary. It's you either succeeded with the models or you fail with the models. What you really hope for with the advantages of 3D printing is it allows them to make much more dynamic sculpts than they have been making. I mean, one of the big comparisons between PP and their competitors is that their sculpts have been lagging significantly for a number of years, and that's been due to their manufacturing process. So that's the one thing you hope looking forward, that they can kind of use this to improve and to do things out of different poses and, you know, much bigger, more detail filled. But ultimately, as a gaming material, it's going to be, you get in your hand, can it take the paint? Does it have the details? Is it miscast or not miscast? It's going to be very much pass-fail from a consumer point of view to me.
Fair. Dude, those models look cool. I just saw you pop up the Cygni stuff. It looks so awesome. And like a couple people said, right, they're really excited about Dusk. I think Dusk is going to be really interesting. It's not a faction I'm probably going to play, but I think the idea of them looks really cool, right? I really like the IKRPG. So we've kind of already seen like some of the stuff that was happening, not to Dusk level, right? Because it feels like Mark IV probably takes place a couple years after the IKRPG setting. IKRPG is 5 years after Requiem. After the Infernal Invasion. So it feels like Mark IV is sometime after that. So I'm really excited to see kind of all the stuff with Dusk. Like, I hope the sculpts look awesome as well.
I am so in tune with the fluff that I played Protectorate for 3 years before I realized people didn't like them and thought they were jerks.
I thought that's why you played them.
Oh, yeah. No, for me, it's all about the rules. And I mean, and that's where a lot of my concern comes down to, is it's not the core rules. The 2D6 system is great. The Focus and Fury system is great. It's the, you have these set armies, and that is either a risk or a reward for Privateer Press. It is how deep are these armies, how deep are the interactions within these models within these armies, and how quickly you're going to solve them, given that you have a limited amount of cards to choose from. And from what I'm seeing on the previews, I'm like looking at these caster cards. I'm like, you're missing half the rules on these casters. Like, where's the depth? Like, literally with Horkish Haagen-Dazs. I'm gonna call him Haagen-Dazs, the Orgoth guy. The reason why they have all the screaming faces is they're screaming for ice cream. That's what's gonna be now.
I like it.
You're welcome.
No.
I really want to see someone. I really hope somebody freaking models that now.
Yeah, so you know, you got Haagen-Dazs, and he is a Sea Raider. He has nothing at all on his card about Sea Raiders. There is nothing, like, you can change his name to Krios and pop him over in Protector to Menoth in Mark 3. You can pop him over in Protector to Menoth in Mark 2, and you won't even notice the difference. Where are these interactions? Where are these depth? Where are these, you know, rules, things that are, you know, making this deep and interesting and reconfigurable with just this one army? Because, and I think I've seen a lot of people get very concerned about like new players adopting it because it's $200 for an initial box set and, you know, that price hike. But I think it's not necessarily like the new players. It's every single time you want to change armies because it became solved or it became static, became bored, that is another $200 to $500. And that's where I'm like, well, I can buy this next army, or I can buy another game.
I mean, you could piecemeal the army, though. You don't have to buy that box set. After a month, they said they will release those models individually. You could buy them.
Oh, I'm sure they'll be cheaper individually.
I have to imagine that 200 army box feels like, it feels like when they started releasing the army boxes, where it's like, here's the troll army box, and it had, you know, two beasts in it, and a unit, and thumper gun, all that stuff. It just feels like a different version of that.
I think it's a fair price for the models that it contains for what you get for it. But if the armies are too shallow that they're rapidly solved, then I am concerned that it is too high a price for the amount of entertainment value that you get out of it, if that makes sense. Because if you know, if we're playing at 100 points, but then it's not $200, it's $500. And I can hop on eBay to another company and I can buy a faction for $500. So it to me, it's a question of how deep are these armies, how quickly are they solved? And as every single company has discovered, the more and more internet community you have, the faster and faster these things get solved. And that's where spell racks are supposed to save you. That's where configure warjacks are supposed to save you by adding in customization, by adding in the ability to change things within these armies. And my concern is, you know, looking at the spell rack cards, is that the spell rack lists that they've had are not properly constructed in order to enable that depth. Where, to me, like, if I'm looking at this, I'm expecting, like, the spells that you're casting every single game that your army is built around are on your caster's card. They are not on the spell rack. The spell rack is something niche. It's something like, you know, if I'm playing the lightning dudes, then I have a lightning strike spell that strikes a piece of terrain. And that terrain's not going to be there every single game, so I'm going to sub that in and out for that. But they have Arcane Shield on there. Arcane Shield is not only useful every single game, it is something that you build your army around. So you're pulling in things from your spell rack that are not niche, and that's a universal across your faction, and then it's not configurable at any point. Then you solve the spell rack. You say, okay, Arcane Shield is going in every single Signar list now because it goes so well on the guys who have Shield Ball. That's my concern when I talk about depth. That's my concern when I talk about replay. That's my concern about you have to have creativity for players within their factions as you could play from game to game to game. And that's where the lack of abilities on caster cards is very concerning to me. Like, literally, they got like a thing on each weapon, and then you got a feat in your spell list. Where is any sort of interest tie back to your faction, your army, on your caster cards? These are supposed to be defining you.
At the same time, in the past, PP has gotten a lot of flack whenever they create something, and it's like, you know, oh, you try justifying fluff as a rule.
Yeah.
So, you know, they got a lot of flack of overpowering or underpowering somebody based upon their fluff narrative. So maybe they swung that pendulum too far, and they need to bring a little bit of character back into the rules.
Well, let me grab an example out of Malifaux, for example. So Malifaux has themes, but they're loose themes. And the way they tie the themes together is that they have a rule that's shared across every single model, more or less, within that theme. So they have an army called that's Nephilim, and they have, if you've ever seen like the movie Aliens, you cut them, they bleed acid on you. Every single model in Nephilim bleeds acid on you. And then they all have wings, so they all fly, and so then they all have melee, they don't really shoot at you. So you have, think of like a Signar analogy, you have Signar, ranged faction, that's your melee equivalent, you have any lightning faction, but then I'm missing that next rule that ties everything with this army together. And then that game company took an extra further where they have rules that tie into that rule where you can pop your own guys to do damage, you can heal your own guys if you splash blood on them. So that's where you get this idea of you have these army units. It's supposed to open up design space for PP because you're not worried about balance outside this army unit. So you're supposed to be able to tie these things in tighter. You're supposed to be able to have these interactions in tighter and be able to focus just on that. And I'm not seeing that stuff.
I think what we got to see is we're also taking a limited view, right? We only see the Warcaster, right? Which, okay, that's fine. And we only see two jacks. We don't see what any of the units do. So units could do something to go build things up, right? There's still going to be unit attachments. There's solos. There's, you know, whatever the cadre is going to bring in. So I don't think we know enough about it to make that type of a snap judgment. Yes, the Warcaster does not have, like, 50 rules. But, like, who, like for Haagen-Dazs, right? Who cares if he's a Sea Raider? Oh, what are you going to give him? Like, ability to not suffer like rough terrain when he goes across deep water. Who cares? Who puts deep water on the table anyways?
Okay.
Right? Like I think there's a difference between having rules that kind of tie into it and rules that just don't make sense. Like, why would I take that to kind of just flutter up the card to make it, oh, it looks more thematic? We also don't know if that overall theme is going to say, hey, here's a set of rules that are come with this overall theme to kind of tie everything together. We're seeing a very, very limited thing for that group.
So
even if you look at like Krix and Minoth, right, they said, hey, these are playtest models. This isn't like the full set of what it could be. So there could be additional rules that come out for those. It's the playtest what the core rules are. We are still in the beta.
For clarity, I'm not judging them on the Krix and Protectorate because those are ported over. I'm not expecting any of this design stuff to apply to those factions. But that's also why I say, don't bother with the legacy stuff, play the new stuff, because these rules and design ideas are supposed to apply to the new stuff. Sorry, yeah. Kevin, I've been to interrupt.
No, so first thing I want to do is, I had to look it up because you two were driving me crazy calling him Haagen-Dazs. I believe his name is Horus.
Yeah, that's what we said, Haagen-Dazs.
Yeah. Haagen-Dazs.
Do you know how many new really players come into a community and immediately leave when all they hear is Ninja Pig jumped over, you know, Chicky Lady and smashed her face in, and they're sitting there going, "What? Like, let's try. Let's try and use real names, please, Harush."
I can't say his real name. But it's got too many vowels.
I hear what Gaston is saying. I think it's possible. Like, if you look at Magic the Gathering and stuff like that, they have rules on their cards that are very flavorful to abilities. And I think that's all Herman's asking for, is give me things that make sense from a narrative or flavor perspective. Not just because you want to toss it in, but like, give things on Orgoth that make sense. This is a pirate from another, you know, this is a raider or something from another country that came over on a boat. There's got to be a way of illustrating that through the rules.
Which I understand, yeah. And one point I want to go up earlier, right? I think we kind of skipped this. I know we don't have that much time left. We might go over a couple minutes because we did have all of our technical issues in the beginning. But even going back to that $200, right? I think $200 sounds like a lot, except for the fact that it's for a 50-point army. If you go and look at any other game to get to a what we think could potentially be a competitive level, right? You're investing way more than $200 into it. If you want to get to a 75, right? So they even said, hey, if you buy this $200 box set, it's going to get you anywhere, I think, from 47 to like 65 points. So let's say that 75 is going to be the standard still. You have to go and buy like one or two more models if you want to do that to go pick up a full 75-point army. That's not that much money. If you look at, for me to go and get into 40K, the cheapest army I could get was Knights, and it was still like $500. And that was to play at 2,000 points. To go and play Legion, that's probably $200 or $300. And you have to buy the box set, by the way, because you got to, well, you can't go buy an Essentials kit, but you got to go buy all this other stuff because they have these unique things. Marvel Crisis Protocol, absolutely love the game, right? It probably takes $200 to $300 to go play it as well.
I don't think anybody ever...
You have to configure those models, though. And that's why I'm bringing up depth versus value. So we have 10 years of history with Privateer Press and Theme Forces. And essentially, each of these armies are theme forces. So if you look at their history, theme forces get solved very quickly. You had, what was the one with Janissa, the little trolls? That was just a terrible thing for a while. You had Bradagus. You have, you know, the Dawnguard theme now. You have the Grimkin theme with all the clockatrices. These things get chopped up and solved very quickly. But that is now your unit of game. And so when I look at, you know, a purchase, I compare it kind of like a movie theater. I'll pay, you know, $20 to go to a movie theater for a 2-hour movie. So my box set has to last me for 10 games before it gets boring. And then you kind of made your money back. And, you know, if it's $500, then you got to get 25 games out of it before, you know. But so how many different ways can I reconfigure it before this gets solved? And when you have these few amount of interactions on the cards, things get solved very, very, very quickly. 40K is an amazing example of where they create 40 different fucking rules, of which two of them are used.
Yeah. Hey, anyone on the chat, brother, if you guys have any questions, please throw them up in the chat, and we'll ramble about it and argue back and forth, because that's what we do generally.
So I want to call out, Vale just mentioned, Vale of Darkness said, real talk, you got to retrain your brain. This is a whole new game. I 100% agree. Like, this, things are going to be different. And like I said earlier, I think Privateer Press is heading in the right direction. But I'm not going to give them the pass of this is the best game they could do. They can do better. And I think a lot of people, when they go on the internet, you see a lot of people in the Facebook groups and stuff like that, they get very adamant about the rule changes or the release of their models and stuff like that. And I think we all need to remember, people get this adamant because they care. somebody who doesn't care about the game is just gonna be like, whatever. I'm gonna shove off, or I'm gonna play whatever. They're not gonna care about it. On the flip side, those of us who are passionate, please make sure you check yourself and don't go on rants, because that doesn't help anybody. But
I've been ranting this whole time.
Yeah, but you rant so quietly. It's one of those things where, and I'm going to give a very unpopular opinion right now, so everybody buckle in for this one. What is happening in Mark 3 to Mark 4 is very similar to what was happening between Warhammer Fantasy and AOS. There was a big time event in their narrative that kind of, you know, rocked the world. They didn't quite go to the extent of blowing it up, but you know, the huge calling that was happening, that as a result transitioned to a new change. And in that new change, the process of them shifting and transitioning from one edition to the next is, hey, we're going to allow you to play with your old rules, i.e. an index of here's the rules that you can play with until we can get to your faction. And then slowly but surely, they were churning out new faction after new faction for those players to shift over to their new AOS faction. And slowly but surely, the older models were churned out. It's the exact same thing is happening here. And you know what? AOS benefited, the AOS community benefited from it 100-fold. It is a much more live and thriving community than Warhammer Fantasy was at the time of End Times. So if that translates to this for Privateer Press, it's only but good. In the future, we have to get through the growing pains now.
And the thing is like, Tony, he's all on board with Mark IV. I haven't actually criticized a single rule that they've written.
You haven't?
I've criticized that they haven't.
The rules that they haven't.
Yeah, it's. I'm not that they made bad changes. I'm like, they need to go further. I'm like, they needed to do more. This is like an alpha game to me, especially from a company that, you know, likes to tout 20 years of design experience. You don't see 20 years of design experience here. You see kind of like, this looks like a brainstorm coming out of them. And the thing is like the only change that they've made that's really bad is the I don't like the way units move. And it's not like I actually went and I did, you know, I watched Warcaster, Neo Machina, Deus Ex games, whatever that one's called. And I watched a couple Star Wars Legion games and I see how the way the models move. I'm like, that's fine. But when you start introducing that to War Machine, I feel like you're going to get goofy ass corner cases. And it's the goofy ass corner cases is why I think it's a bad change.
See, it's giving me as corner cases. What makes me excited?
But you know what? If all the structural stuff and the creativity is there, I can work with teleporting bastions across the table. I don't mind, you know, doing that to you.
You're only going to be teleporting two because they're min units.
Yeah.
Honestly, I don't care about the unit sizes at all.
So
the way the game structure, that's fine.
That's fine. So, Antonio, I cannot read what you wrote. I do not speak Spanish. I apologize. But Andrew had a question. Is what can we do to reduce the negativity in the community? Get rid of
people.
Drop the ban hammer.
Let it happen constructively. The second you go on the internet and you tell somebody, hey, you just need to calm down, it's not that bad, I promise you they're not going to calm down. Tell me in the history of ever when you told somebody to calm down, it actually worked.
Kevin, I need you to calm down. Right
yeah,
now.
You can go to You're hell.
A little out of hand.
And you can go to hell. I think we need to allow people to be able to vet their frustrations with the change. I think we need to be open to hearing it. But at the same time, it's a bit of give and take. Those people need to be willing to understand, accept the change, and be open to hearing what people talk about. You can't change somebody else's negativity. You can only affect your own. And you need to be aware of, you know, from both sides of the equation where you fit in that negativity and change for you.
I mean, I think to kind of dovetail off of what he said is, in any game I approach, even in like in this where I'm being incredibly critical, I try to be solution focused. I like, here's a problem I had within, you know, these cards, you can throw in Liven and all that stuff in and fix this stuff. Within the spell rack, you can make them niche and fix, you know, the order of the spells and, you know, adjust things. be solution focused. And that translates down into, you know, the game gets released and everyone's playing it and they're all upset about balancings. Like, we went through this with Halo 3, we went through this with Halo 2, we went through this with Halo 1, we went through this with Halo 0.
I'm very offended with these Halo comments.
I need you to calm down, sir. And the thing is everyone was, like, very upset about the cloud walls and they were complaining about it. I'm like, okay, that's wonderful, but you still have to play against it. What is the solution? What tools do you have in your army? How do we work around this? So if you be solution focused, then even though you're kind of maybe struggling, you're struggling in a positive direction rather than a negative direction.
So just let you guys know, we do have about a minute left. Are we ready to wrap up, or do we want to talk for a couple more minutes, or what do you want to do?
So I want to ask as a kind of closing question, because if we don't, we'll probably end up talking for another 2 or 3 hours, and I need to sleep.
That's so bad.
We started this out by kind of saying, like, what would it take to get you back? And Tony, you're pretty much, you're the Privateer Press poster boy. You're out there waving your flag and saying, hey, everybody, this is amazing. Herman's basically run the numbers to the ground to make sure that mathematically it's either a pass or a fail. Like, legitimately, what would it take? Like, are you ready to take the jump into these games on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being I'm just going to stay the hell away from it until it's fully released, to 10, I'm ready to buy everything and play now. Where are you on the scale?
So I'll go first, right, since Gaston's thing is still muted. So like I said, I'm jumping in, right? And part of the reason why I'm jumping in, one, because it brings back a lot of really good memories for me. This is the first miniature model game I ever played. So there's some nostalgia, right? But I am also very, very lucky that there is a play group that plays 5 minutes away from me, right? Rain on our live chat right now, right? He got a group of his friends to start playing, and they grew the community pretty significantly. Where he's like what a PG should be, right? Like, it's sad that there's no more press gangers, because he would be a great press ganger, right? He's really leading that. So for me, it's making it more exciting, where I already have a good relationship with them. I like talking to them. I can go 5 minutes down the street and go play. And I think that's really nice, because I have a community built right over here. What I would be more also really excited about is if, as we have a group, you know, because we have so much history, I was playing with you guys, when I first started press gaming, you guys were the first couple people that came to my tournaments, right? I met all of you through this. I'd love to see us as a group play again. That might be very far-fetched, right? That might never happen again. There was 8 to 10 of us that played pretty regularly, and we don't do that anymore. I'd love to see that. But for me, I'm at a solid 10, I think, right now.
I'm going to clock in at a 5. There's a lot of good here. And I understand I'm being critical, but on just the system itself, as the 2d6 mechanic, the bell curve, the boosting, the focus, all of that is incredibly solid. And that is what they have been trying to polish between Mark II, Mark III, and Mark IV. And with each iteration, that system is getting polished. What I need and what I'm waiting to see is partly the steamroller packet, partly the complete armies, and see, is it something where I can play a single army and have the ability to get multiple play styles out of that, the ability to do, you know, different configurations, depth. Can I get a lot of depth out of a single army? And that's kind of what I'm waiting to see. And I don't even know what Tony's doing over there.
Sorry. My screen was being weird.
Is it just so steamy that it's fogging up?
No, my screen's glitching. I apologize.
It's getting hot in here. So I'm actually going to put myself at like, I think I'm closer to like a 3 or 4. Like, with everything that we've said here. No, hear me out. With everything that we've said here, I think they're heading in the right direction. I need to see more. But honestly, here's the thing for me. And it's going back to that whole community and purpose I was talking about earlier. If it's an amazing game, great, fantastic. But if there's no presence in the stores, there's no local community for me to go to, then I've got a great game that I could play with like one or two people in my basement. That's not what I'm looking for. I'm looking for a community to engage with. And in our local area, many of the stores, Privateer Press has been pulled out of. The stores have decided this isn't a risk we're willing to take on our finances or our stock, so we're pulling it out. So what is Privateer Press going to do to get back into the stores and start building that good faith with the stores and with the communities? And if it's not through PGs or something like that, what are they going to do? Because I'm not going to buy into the game and start learning the game and play the game if I can only play with you two yahoos every once in a while. I need a community to play at. And I legitimately don't know how Privateer's Press is going to do that, but I feel not doing something to build back that faith with the stores and get those communities going again is going to be a death knell to the long-term survivability of Mark IV.
Yeah, that's fair.
Expecting me to be more positive than him.
I was not expecting that. So I guess we'll just end on that super somber note. Thanks a lot, Kevin.
I'm gonna toss it out to the community in the comments below. Give us your 1 to 10 and give us your reasonings. What's your number at from 1 to 10? 1 being you're not gonna touch it. 10 being you're all on board with Tony waving that flag. Where are you in the scale, and what's your reasonings to justify it? And share it out on the community.
Yeah, just really quick, at least one person already did write, Wargamer Music said they're at a 6 to 7 right now. You know, their biggest point is what legacy, maybe a decision pivot point. You know, but yeah, that's where we're at, guys. Everyone who came on, thank you all very much. Again, apologize for the very beginning of the technical support. Appreciate everyone who stayed with us to go and do that. I know that was a little painful at first, but hopefully you all enjoyed this. Will this happen again? I don't know. I think as a group, we're going to try to figure out if we want to do something like this again, if we want to rotate, bring some other people on, if other people are advanced maneuvers. I know Lich Lord Fro was out there. Solos was on our group chat. And then was Pokey out there as well?
I think he might have been peeping.
Silent Wallflower. Yeah.
So if we can get more people on, we might do it again.
You're supposed to owe me a game.
I do owe you a game. So we are going to do a game. I don't know if we're going to do it through Wartable. We probably will do it through on Wartable. But we will do a game and we'll convince Kevin to put it on the channel.
I think it'd be fun to have him do like some John Madden commentary.
Yeah. Dude, I love that.
Oh man, you know the
and good night, folks. We're done. Bye.